Furniture is our passion.
This public service message is presented by BHJ Property Management at 101 South Main.
The Story Woman's Club cordially invites you to the 50th anniversary of our annual turkey dinner, Sunday, October 5th from 11 to 2. Join your family, friends, and neighbors for a delicious turkey dinner with all the trimmings and, of course, our famous homemade pie for dessert. Adults $20, $10 for kids 6 to 10, 5 and under eat free. Dine in or get it to go. Just one more reason to visit Beautiful Story.
Big news. Radio Inc. magazine has named our own general manager, Bob Grammons, to the list of the top managers in radio for 2025. Bob has dedicated more than 40 years to the radio profession, including 19 years leading Sheridan Media with growth, innovation, and commitment to serving our community. Congratulations, Bob, and thank you for making Sheridan Media a trusted voice in our community every day. This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Thursday, September 25th, and from Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, I'm joined by Undersheriff Patrol Lieutenant Doug Sanders and Detentions Lieutenant Charles Gibbons. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
It's been a while since I had you in here, LT. How are things down at the DC?
The detention is doing well. We're doing what we normally do. We get people in and we get them out.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't like them to be there too long.
Yeah, we don't want people there as long.
You like empty cells.
Yes.
You don't like full cells. How's the sheriff's office at the beginning of the fall season?
Doing great. Just keeping on. We're as busy as we have been. With the only notable change that in the fall we start dealing with hunting season hunters and generally more search and rescue callouts.
Mm. You know, I didn't think about that, but with that season comes a lot of different problems.
Yes.
Because you assist and help out Wyoming Game and Fish quite a bit.
Yes, we will help them out. Generally speaking, it's just a lot of hunters, they end up staying longer than they intend and they don't let family know. So we will usually get a call from a family member that's like, hey, this agreed upon time, they didn't return. And, you know, generally not real familiar with the location that they think they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So then we just go hunt them down, find them, find out they're all right. They just chose to stay later.
Yeah, it's good to hear a lot of those come out pretty positive.
A couple little tidbits for hunters out there. There's a lot more technology out there with the iPhone satellite stuff.
Mm.
Let your family know where you're going to be because your wife's going to be at home worrying about you. So
yeah.
Make sure you use your technology, use the stuff you got because it's out there. So
you might
saves us calls and...
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Saves your butt so you're not in trouble with your wife.
Yeah. Don't know which one's worse. Right? You'll be up there stalking a deer and you get a tap on the shoulder, turn around to see a sheriff. You need to call home.
Yeah.
All right. Now, there are a couple of positions open down at the sheriff's office. Why don't we talk about these? What qualities does the sheriff's office really look for when applicants are coming through the door?
For me, I would say that I would like someone to be proactive, personable, respectful, and willing to serve their community.
Undersheriff, you guys do a lot of talking.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, our SPD does a fantastic job shaking hands and answering any questions residents have. But I would imagine deputies driving out there quite often, checking in with our ag producers and the smaller ancillary towns that we've got out there. You guys probably do a lot of window exchanges, you know, two trucks pulling up, just checking on each other. Got to kind of be a people person.
Very much so.
And now, can you talk about the academy that all of our law enforcement recruits get sent down there? Detention center, patrol, all of it.
Correct. So there's two different academies. There's a patrol academy, and it's peace officer basic and detention officer basic. They're two separate academies. So unfortunately, you become a detention deputy, you got to go back to the Douglas Academy again, which most people don't really want to. But the detention academy is like seven to 9 weeks. It depends on the time of year. Sometimes there's holidays and stuff that come in. And the The patrol basics, 13 weeks. 14 weeks.
14 weeks. So it's kind of like having to go back to basic training.
Yep. It's like college on steroids, I like to think of it. Because you go down, you're a dorm setting, you're learning, you're constantly doing new skills. You're with a group of people. It was like my college. I never really went to college, so it was like my college on steroids. It was quick. It was fast. You learn what you got to learn, and then you get back because you got people at home waiting for you.
What was your experience like? Really eye-opening? Or
The academy for me is a lot different than it was back because I went to the academy 11 years ago now, so it's changed a lot. COVID changed it a lot, making it a lot more online type of learning. Humans have changed the way they learn. Because when I went, it was a lot of, you'd go to a classroom, lecture hall, PowerPoints. I mean, we had EOV, we had firearms, we had custody control, all that stuff that's still there.
Yeah.
But I hear from my new guys coming back, they do a lot more online learning, and they do a lot of, like, they have to teach themselves and work with the instructors to learn stuff, because it's a good skill to have, because when you get back to the job, sometimes you're by yourself and you got to figure it out and you got to learn and you got to make right decisions. Helps with problem solving and that type of stuff.
You know, and PowerPoint, for all of its applications, we used to have a saying, death by PowerPoint.
Right.
Going and sitting in an amphitheater or something somewhere and having to dump water down your back.
I will say I enjoyed it. I've been to DOB. I started out in the jail and then went through POB as well. I love the structure. I love the topics because they're interesting. They're fun. They're hands-on. So for us, you know, we had firearms, investigations, some of the same things that Lieutenant Gibbons had spoken about. For example, like building searches, traffic stops. Those were all very fun topics. And I love the fact that I got to get down there, get all my training done, and return. But you do have some time away from family. But I did like the structure and then being, you know, hands-on and just immersed in that profession to get through that training and then return to our respective officer agency. But in addition to the WLEA training, we will run them through three different field training officers. So they'll have additional training when they get back to our agency in addition to that academy training.
Interesting. So they go get the basics and then they come back here and they're taught basically the things that you apply in office.
Correct.
Now, if ride-alongs, if someone out there is listening and they're thinking, you know what, this may be a career path. This may be something I want to do, but I want to learn a little bit more. Could I schedule a ride-along with one of our deputies?
Yep, that's a great question. We have two means to kind of see what it's like as far as a day in the life of a patrol or detention deputy. We do ride-alongs and job shadows. So I think the only thing that is required for both myself and Lieutenant Gibbons is just contacting the sheriff's office and then speaking with one of us, and we can coordinate to get a ride-along or a job shadow coordinated with a detention or a patrol deputy.
LT, what's the testing process look like? I walk through the door, I make that decision, you know what, and this is what I want to do. Where do I begin?
So you start with sending an application and resume in, just like any other job. And then in the detention center, we like to run you through, like, so to get into the academy, there's a Cooper standard, which is a fitness test. You do push-ups, you do sit-ups, you do a mile and a half run. And you have to meet a certain standard to move on to the next day of training. Like, that is day one academy. So we feel like in the detention center, we like to start that's our start test. We do the Cooper standards, make sure they're up to snuff. And then we do interviews. And then if they're successful there, then they have to meet with the sheriff. And then the sheriff says, go ahead, backgrounds. Then we do backgrounds. Then we have to do a psych test, physical, make sure they're good. And then they start the job. And so it's usually about a month and a half process. It's not quick. It depends on, a lot of time, it depends on how many people call back. Because most of the time when law enforcement calls, they're like, oh, why are they calling me? Mm-hmm. And so it's really nice when the applicant's like, hey, this agency might be calling you because I put in an application.
Yeah. Instead of trying to avoid you, right?
Exactly.
Now, LT, what makes working at the detention center here in Sheridan unique?
So a lot of people probably don't know this, but every jail is very different. So if I went to, let's say I go to Johnson County Detention Center, there I can do a walkthrough and walk through their jail, but I won't know where I'm going because this is a totally different layout. It's not like there's a standard, this is how this jail is.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing about working at Sheridan is we like to foster growth, and we understand that like a lot of young people that are just getting the profession want to start, get their foot in the door, or want to start in detentions. And we just foster that growth, and we want to get them the skills they need to like get better in life, even if it isn't going to the road, if it's other skills. Like you learn skills in detentions, like problem solving. You learn how to talk to people. You learn all sorts of great things that doesn't just work in our job. Like you mm-hmm. You need leadership skill outside of being a sheriff's deputy or outside of being a detention deputy. So it's good that we can teach those skills, and it's kind of a confined space. So you're not, and there's usually someone always around to ask questions to if you're lost. And so it's a great place to foster your skills as just a human being. So you're ready for whatever comes up in your life.
Yeah. Is it a stressful job? Would you call it a stressful job?
After I've been there as long as I have, the stress is different. Like when I first started, you're starting to get bookends, you got people for court, and it's like, oh man, today's so crazy. And then after you, like any other job after a while, it's like, oh, it's just old hat. Like we'll get through it. Like we leave at 7. We'll get through it. We'll get what we can done, and we get it done. But it just kind of goes in waves.
Yeah.
And it just kind of depends on the day. Some days are pretty hectic and crazy, and you get through them. You know you're leaving at 7, so you just do what you can, and then you get to go home, wake up in the morning, and do it all over again.
LT, a lot of individuals actually start at the detention center, as you said, kind of grab some core skills, and then maybe move on to patrol. Under Sheriff, that's exactly what you did, is it not?
Correct, it is.
So you started down there. Do you feel that gaining those skills, I wouldn't say vital, because you don't have to start that way, but did you find it very helpful in later situations that you had to deal with on the road?
I very much would agree with that. I think probably the one single greatest benefit I see is you kind of have a crash course of dealing with people every day. That's a primary component of working at a detention center, is you're dealing with multiple people every day for various reasons and duties that you have. And you bring that skill that is acquired down to the road. It makes it much, much easier as far as dealing with people in that capacity as well.
I would imagine, LT, a lot of this is conflict and mediation.
Yeah, so definitely a lot of conflict, because most people that come to the detention center are coming in it's a crisis for them.
Like, they're having a bad day.
Yeah, it's a bad day. And so you're dealing with people having bad days all the time, and that correlates to the road because they're calling because they're having a bad day or something's wrong, and they're calling law enforcement. So you kind of get that, kind of get your foot, you're going to get in the door of dealing with people in crisis, because you're going to be dealing with that on the road too.
All the time.
All the time.
And as you said, every single situation is different. There isn't what you would say. And this was even one of the questions I've got written down here. Is there such thing as a typical day in either of your positions?
I would say no to both.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's going to be different all the time. So if you're looking for a job where no day is the same as yesterday, this is a fantastic opportunity.
And that's kind of the beauty in this profession, is that every day is different. For patrol, I mean, one minute you can be wrangling like a loose cow and putting it back in the pasture, and the next minute you can be in a high-speed pursuit.
Yeah.
Like it's just so varied, so different, and even similar calls are still different to a degree.
It's really funny that you bring up the loose cow, because I went on a ride along once many years ago, and that's exactly what we ended up doing. It was late at night, and we ended up out there trying to rustle a bunch of black cows that had got out in the middle of the night. So I even jumped out and helped on that. All right, I do have to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more with our Sheridan County Sheriff's Office right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE, 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit eFirstFederal.bank, member FDIC.
Winner of The Voice and rising national talent, Huntley brings raw, powerful sound and magnetic stage presence to the YO Theater as part of his hometown tour, Saturday, September 27th at 7 p.m.
Oh, Virginia, baby, oh, my pretty lady, yes, I'm gonna make you mine.
With a unique blend of rock, soul, and country influences, Huntley's deeply emotional performances and distinctive sound have captivated fans across the country.
I'm holding on, yet I'm not letting go.
Don't miss this opportunity to experience Huntley live in Sheridan. Tickets are available now at the YO box office or online at yotheater.com.
Did you know that Midas can perform your manufacturer's scheduled maintenance? For most, that means every 30,000 miles you need to check or service critical fluids in the transmission, transfer case, differentials, engine coolant, and brakes. Midas goes a step further with a visual inspection before recommending service. If it can wait, Midas will advise as such. If it needs serviced, Midas will explain why and provide a no-obligation quote. Midas, helping maintain your car, advising what needs fixing, and what can wait. Call or stop by today.
Magic Melanie here, First Northern Bank VIP and four-time defending champ of the First Northern Bank and Carroll Furniture Pro Football Pick'em. Nobody can touch me, but here's what happened on the morning show this week.
Okay, let's look at Cincinnati at Denver. Jamie?
I don't know.
All right, Jamie, that's a good honest answer.
Yeah.
Green Bay at Dallas. What do you think, Jamie?
I'm not sure. I'm not.
Wow. That's the kind of expertise they're looking for.
No more armchairs. Yeah. Jamie, I'm not sure.
I am not sure on that.
One more before we go here, real quick. Around
Wait, hold
the
on. Should we do Survivor pick first?
Yes. Jamie?
Maybe Green Bay.
Green Bay?
Maybe
Green Bay.
Not sure.
Good luck, Chuck. Carroll's Furniture VIP here. You can't win if you don't play, so join the fun. This week's prize is $100 in Chamber Bucks from Branded 307. Click on the Pro Football Pick'em banner on the contest page on SheridanMedia.com and tune in every Wednesday to the Crow Morning Show on 103.9 FM at 7:30 to hear our picks and how I crushed it.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with Sheridan County Undersheriff, Patrol Lieutenant Doug Sanders, and Detentions Lieutenant Charles Gibbons. All right, Undersheriff, scam of the month, something that we cover every month, and it seems like every time we try to get a handle on one, another one pops up. What do we got this month?
Well, this one is a recent one that we had here in the past couple of weeks, but it's associated with clicking on suspicious links and notifications. These links can come in many forms. Generally speaking, you most likely see them on like a email string. It might just be an email that you get advising of some concerning issue to you, right? It could be like unauthorized use of a credit card or a data breach. The purpose is to concern the victim enough that they feel compelled to click on that link. Once they do so, essentially speaking, that the suspect or whomever the scammer is can remotely log into your computer. In this instance, it was a data breach refund. And then when they click the link, the computer act different. And then lo and behold, a Microsoft employee link came up suggesting they call for assistance, and they did so. And then the scammer for payment requested several hundred dollars in Walmart gift cards. And I think that's probably a big clue that it's a scam. I don't know of any legitimate business that utilizes gift cards as a means of payment.
Now, we've talked about the gift cards in the past. This is essentially the scammer's way to get a hold of money. It's untraceable.
Right. It's very difficult to track. And I think that's obviously the main reason as to why they like that, right? They'll have you purchase the gift cards, and then they'll want you to electronically send the code on the back once you made that purchase, and then you'll send that to them, and then they keep trying to get additional money out of you. My suggestion that we have is that if you feel like you are being scammed, and it is associated with a business that you have, or pay to, then just look up a prior letter or anything that you've gotten in the mail or a prior email that's legitimate, and you go through the means of contacting them through that, and just verify, you know, if you did receive something concerning or something that you may feel is a scam.
Just a real quick sidebar. This almost happened to me, and they were so convincing. I almost paid them $285, believing that somehow I had missed an old bill. But they had all my previous addresses. They seemed to know the dates that I lived at these locations. And they said, you had this product from this time to this time, and you left without paying a bill. And I thought, man, I could have swore I zeroed that out. Due to my conversations with the sheriff's office on these subjects, I hung up on that individual. I called that company, and they said, you've been zeroed out since 2008. There's absolutely no bill. So they have a lot of information that they can find on us online, and they can use that to convince us that we need to get this bill paid.
Yep.
So just make sure that you're letting other residents know about these things. Undersheriff, is there a way that we can kind of get community members to help spread this type of awareness to a lot of our more vulnerable residents here?
I believe a lot of facilities already go through and advertise these types of scams that are going around. Obviously, the greatest method we could use is communication, right? To let each other know, obviously, what we're doing today. Another great component that you have that when a scam comes into play is they make you feel like you have to act urgently. You have the benefit of time. You don't doesn't need to be paid within the hour. I mean, you have a couple days to go through and verify if it is a scam or if it is something legitimate. But communication is key, and just getting word of mouth out there.
These are the conversations they should be having around the dinner table. You know, hey, I almost got scammed, or hey, this deal was too good to be true, and what do you know? Turned out that it was. Because those types of sales situations happen here locally quite a bit, especially utilizing social media platforms. Now, they use fear-based language in their messages, but as you just touched on, time's on your side. If this supposed bill is out there, a real company would probably allow you the time. I can almost guarantee it, actually, would allow you the time. You want to double check us? That's fine. Go ahead. Make sure that this is all legitimate. We'll get this done right, correct?
Correct.
Now, any common trends or new tactics that you've seen over the course of, I'd probably say, the last month, month and a half, that has really caught anybody off guard that have been reported to the sheriff's office?
Not that I can recall offhand. I do check the scams, obviously, before I come in, and we have this monthly conversation just to see if there's anything new. And this scam that we touched upon today is kind of the only new one that I've seen. Otherwise, a lot of the scams we see over time are just reincarnations of the same scam that we saw maybe months or years ago.
Mm-hmm. They'll use it in an area for X amount of time, and then people start picking up on that, so they stop. They go to another tactic, but they always keep that first one in their back pocket. Return to it again. Now, if I feel like someone that I care about has been scammed, or maybe even I've been scammed, as I said, I almost was, what do I need to do at that point?
You can contact us if you feel that you are scammed, victim or not. You know, we still do like to hear about these scams, right? So just because you weren't necessarily a victim doesn't mean you shouldn't call and report it, because somebody else in the same area may likely be a victim of that scam. And we see that more frequently, as you touched upon, the social media scams, where they'll advertise something like a pet or a vehicle at this great, phenomenal price for sale in an area. And then they have all these links. And what they try to tell you is, it's such a good deal, I need some money up front to hold or reserve this item for you. That is usually something we'll see more than one victim in a given area like our area. Those are great ones where we do also see that communication component, right? Because when somebody feels like it's a scam, they're usually putting in, this is a scam, don't do it, I've seen it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You open up the page to look at the product, go down to the comments, see what people are saying. If people are saying, hey, this is a scam, believe them. they may have actually ended up kind of becoming a victim themselves, and they're trying to warn everybody else. I was also almost scammed over a real estate thing down at the flagpole in Cheyenne, a rental. Excuse me. Too great, you know. But this person who I was in contact with said, I'm going to need $300, and then you can come look at the house. Pay me the $300, you'll come look at it, and we'll get you moved in. I went to the agency that they had tagged, asked them, and they said, we don't even own that house. So it was all a scam. And then that agent sat me down and explained to me how they had been doing that to individuals in town. So it could be anything. Dirt bikes, pets, cars, anything at all.
Yeah, we actually, I just thought of one that we had here the past month was that old scam where they contact someone and say they have a warrant for their arrest. And they, you know, they lead you to believe that you're talking with a law enforcement officer. For us, we don't take bonds in person. So that's usually anymore that's handled by our detention center and or the courts.
We've actually had scammers call. And the one I can think of most recently is one of them called one of our sheriff's deputy and said they were Sergeant Mulliken at the sheriff's office. And the guy goes, really, you're Sergeant Mulliken? Because I'm sitting right next to you and you're not on the phone.
Wow. Wow. So they've got to do is basically look up kind of a personnel list online. Yep. And then they can steal those names and use them.
Yep.
That's horrible. Switching gears on you real quick. Oh,
I'm sorry. I do have one thing to add as far as answering that last question, if there are resources available. There is internet-based scams. Mm-hmm. You can go on and log into it's ic3.gov. I believe it's an FBI-based website, but you can document the scam on there. You'll go through the prompts and fill out the information, and they document and record all the scams. So any big scams coming up, if it's, you know, they have a method or means to document and see if, you know, if you are out of money, they can investigate some of these scams, but it's a good means to just understand all the scams because that information gets disseminated to law enforcement. So mm-hmm. that makes us better aware of the scams that they're seeing on a national level that we might see on a local level.
Well, that's good to hear because whenever I try to look up like big scams, that's usually where I go. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has got a pretty good sized, basically almost like an archive of the scams that they've seen come through the years. And folks, you never know. You may be dealing with something new that we don't know yet. They're always trying to stay ahead of law. So give that website a look. IC3.gov. We'll get that up online and help everybody else out. You know, got to come together as a community on this because it seems like I've been doing this job for, four or five years now, and we've got different scams each month. So that should kind of tell you how many scams are actually out there. Switching gears on you, sir. Statute of the month, 31-5-910. Vehicle lights required to be illuminated anytime 30 minutes after sunset to 30 minutes before sunrise. What are some of the most common violations you see when dealing with this statute?
We don't, luckily, due to the daytime running lights, we don't see this as frequently as we did back in the day when you had to manually turn your lights on or off. It's still a good one, per se. It's not so much we see at night or in the early morning hours due to that daylight running light system, but a great example of this is per that statute, any other time when insufficient light and or hazardous weather conditions arise and when persons or vehicles are not easily observed within a distance of 1,000 feet. A great example of this is think of when we get close to winter and we have those flurries, right? Mm. You've been in situations where you're driving and nobody has any lights illuminated whatsoever. The daylight running lights likely won't come on because it is daytime, but it is still a very, very good idea to manually turn your headlights and taillights on in inclement weather as well.
You know, I've seen some of the rainstorms this year have gotten this place so dark. I'll be leaving and it's still only mid-afternoon. And I'm like, I got to turn the lights on. If not for me, for everybody else, I drive a very little car. So I want to be seen. It's a safety issue.
Yeah. It's and it's one of the easiest things a motorist can do, right? I mean, just a click of a button and you can be seen or better seen.
Now, when you're out there on the road, when we were kids, we would always see the one headlight. You punch your brother in the arm or something, right? How often are you stopping individuals out there on patrol with one headlight? And do you just kind of give a warning generally on that first time offense type?
Yes. We'll stop one headlight, one taillight. Generally speaking, it's always just going to be a warning, and more or less it's to let them know. Usually the driver can see when a headlight's out, but say like the rear tail lights or brake light are out, that's something you're generally not going to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And in our experience, a lot of times, like say when a tail light goes out, the other tail light will soon follow. So before you know it, both tail lights could potentially be out. So it's more of an education piece, just letting them know. We usually do not sight on it, with the exception that if someone's repeatedly been warned
mm-hmm.
and they refuse to do it, and I mean, it is a hazard, right? We don't want a crash or them to be involved in a crash or anybody else involved with them. So they could be sighted on the occasion if they refuse to get it done after being repeatedly warned.
And you know, that's one of those situations in the military, you always performed PMCS. Turn on all the lights, you walk around, you throw someone behind there, check my brake lights. But then I think to myself, how often do we do that as civilians?
No, that's a great example. That's something that I don't do enough in my personal vehicle, but it's something that we require for our work vehicles.
Mm. Make sure all the lights are on, make sure the brake lights are working properly before you head out there. Big family vacations, I think, are an important time to do that. And maybe it, you know, we could implement something as a community, you know, hey, it's St. Patty's Day, check your lights or something like that, you know, where you just walk around the car with the lights on, have the partner or the kids stand behind the car, check those brake lights, make sure they're operating as well. It's, as you said, Undersheriff, it's not something we do a lot, but it's just as important as anything else.
Yep. And a great, easy way to do this too is at night, say in the garage, if the door's shut, you don't have to turn your vehicle on. You just turn the ignition on and then you should be able to see the illumination to ensure that you're seeing two brake lights in the back, two tail lights, and then obviously the headlights and turn signals.
So it, has the office seen more offenses of this during various seasons like fall or winter to your memory?
To my memory, no. I mean, it's usually just kind of a constant throughout the year.
Now, what advice would you give to drivers to make sure that they are always in compliance with this?
As far as just routinely check, like we touched upon, just check and ensure that your vehicle, all your lights are going, and kind of have that buddy system that you had mentioned if you don't have anybody there to check it yourself.
And if you're passing somebody and someone flashes their lights on you, maybe your kid got in your seat and turned your automatic lights off, like... Help each other out doing stuff like that, too.
That's an excellent point, LT. I've actually been out there during rainy times, and individuals will give you the old flash, and mm-hmm. it's kind of the signal, hey, you're about to get into an area where you are going to need these.
Right. Yeah, that's a great example. It's a kind of an over-reliance on that daytime running lights now. Yeah. You see a lot. That's much more frequent.
Yeah, and they could be off, and you'd never know.
Because kids do kid things.
It's a button. It's got to be pushed. Right, right. If it's a lever, it's got to be pulled. And if it's a revolver, I got to turn it. Right. That I can completely understand. I think a lot of us still have those drivers in our minds. Lieutenants, I want to thank you both so much for coming on the show this morning. It's always a pleasure having you on. And thank you for all the information. Hopefully we get a lot of really great recruits headed your way. We'll get that up online and see what comes of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. When we return, we're going to speak with some estate lawyers about an upcoming seminar you're not going to want to miss. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Shan Foster with Country Pet Inn and All Around Canine. You've had great success in adopting some of the more difficult dogs from the dog and cat shelter.
We've adopted close to 23 dogs from the animal shelter. About 85% have gone into service dog work.
And that's made a difference in both their lives and the owners.
Yeah, I'd like to think so, yeah.
So in some way, maybe the ones that people often consider to be difficult have potential that just isn't being correctly tapped into.
Yes, you see that a lot in your high drive dogs, where people don't know how to deal with the energy.
And so it's kind of interesting to match a person with potential who needs a little help.
Well said.
And then an animal with potential that also needs a little help, and they can kind of work together.
That's what you're looking for, where one is needing help in one area, the other is in another, and they meet in the middle. You're looking for how they can help each other in different situations when needed, because it truly is a team.
If you're struggling with your pet, take the first step on a better path. Contact Shan Foster at countrypetinn.com.
Heads up, whether it's at work, at home, or play, take a few seconds to look up and locate any overhead power lines. When working outside, be sure to keep yourself and any tools or equipment you're using at least 10 feet away. Teach your children to fly kites or toys in areas away from overhead power lines, and do not attempt to remove anything that has become tangled with a line. Always assume an overhead power line is energized and dangerous. A safety message brought to you by Montana Dakota Utilities, in the community to serve.
There's still time to save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Whether you're creating a new patio or installing a retaining wall, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast using our easy design and buy program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on all landscape blocks and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
Hey, Doug, my car looks like a leaf pile and smells like pumpkin spice gone wrong.
That's not pumpkin spice, Bob. That's old French fries.
Can you fix that?
Absolutely. The Wear and Chevrolet Detail Shop scrubs, shines, and polishes any vehicle inside and out.
Even mine?
Especially yours. We'll make it look brand new. No rake required.
Finally, my car won't double as a compost pile.
Fall into clean at the Wear and Chevrolet Detail Shop. Gift certificates are perfect for holidays, or get your ride protected before winter hits.
Wearing Chevrolet Detail Shop, 409 Broadway in Sheridan.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, I am joined by estate lawyers Tim Tarver and Christopher Shearwood. Good morning and welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Floyd. I have you guys on here about once a year. I didn't get a chance to see either of you last year, so it's good to have you back. I'm glad
to
see you. This seminar is one that we've talked about, I think, ever since I started doing this show. Yes. You hold it once a year.
Yes.
I cannot stress the importance of the information that we're about to share, folks. Each year, the seminar has been educating residents on estate planning. Now, COVID notwithstanding, how many years have you held this seminar?
I think this is 27.
27 years. Yeah. Wow.
It's gone fast.
It always does.
Yeah.
The older I get, the faster it seems to go, which is why estate planning is so important to do now.
For everyone, yeah.
Now, where and when will this year's seminar be?
So this year it's going to be a week from this coming Saturday at the Hub, starting at 9 a.m. And so we go till noon, then our sponsors provide lunch for the people that are there, and then we go from that till about 3 o'clock. We're usually done by 3 or 3:30. The last segment is an opportunity for people to ask questions. So actually, they can ask questions as we go through the day, too, but there is a segment specifically dedicated to answering questions.
Probably a more in-depth type of question and answer period. Excuse me. Is there anything new or different this year from previous years?
So we always do something that's a little bit different, and it oftentimes happens over the lunch break. This year, we're going to talk about, you know, homegrown estate planning, mistakes that people make when they're attempting to do this on their own.
Yeah.
Because that really can make an estate difficult to manage after they're gone. So that's sort of an important thing for us to make sure that people understand that some of these self-help things can lead their estate over a cliff.
Yeah, Yeah. I know a lot of people out there, you know, they want to be a little bit more independent, which I can completely understand. But this is one of those things that does require some expertise, correct?
Correct. There are some nuances. There are some technicalities. There are some things that can be done on your own. But sometimes, and we often actually see things done on people's own, create difficulties, yeah. create unexpected results. And we just want to help people and provide information on what is available for them and what options they have out there, and then help them get connected with somebody to guide them through that process, a professional, and not just, you know, do it on your own and what your friend did at the coffee shop.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What do they call them? Side stool lawyers or something like that. Now, who would benefit most from attending this seminar? Is it mainly retirees, or do you think younger families should really take a look at this too?
So I think, you know, people who are retirees definitely need to get with the program, but younger people do too. Their situation may be a little bit different because they may have young children. One of the things that we talk about is wills, which is where you appoint a guardian for minor children. And that can be probably more important to a young couple than disposition of their property. I mean, most of us, it takes us a while to accumulate something, but our kids come pretty fast.
Yeah.
And they need protection first. And so the use of a will to appoint a guardian is probably the most important thing. But everybody needs, in addition to a will, needs a power of attorney and an advanced health care directive, because none of us know when we're going to have a medical emergency.
Sir, could you elaborate on the medical directive? What exactly are we asking for with that?
With that is you're appointing somebody, and normally a list of people in some order so that you have backups to your backups, to make healthcare-related decisions for you if and when a time comes that you can not do that for yourself. And that could simply be due to aging, cognitive decline, dementia, but also a simple car accident.
Yeah.
There are, you know, things that are completely outside of our control that do not necessarily only happen to us in our 80s and 90s. And having these documents truly for anybody who is 18 years or over, because you're an adult and now the doctor in the hospital is not necessarily going to share your information with your parents, with your siblings, with your spouse, and with your children. And having these documents in place to make sure that everything goes efficiently and smoothly in the time of an emergency is yeah. critical.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's very important. 18 years or over, I'd say anybody 18 or over would benefit from our seminar.
They would walk out of there with enough information that would apply to their lives, at least in some manner.
I think they would get, and actually I know they will get, a solid foundation of understanding. The first session at 9 a.m. is all about terms, definitions, concepts, and creating that foundational understanding. And yes, we go from 9 a.m. to 3:30, but you don't have to stay for the whole thing. You can look at our advertisement, pick the thing that you would like to see, and come for that. And if you have to go and do something else, please do. Please stop in, come back, or, of course, stay for the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Extremely beneficial, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, sir, because a lot of kids turn 18. You know, the gentlemen go down, they make sure that they're registered, they do what they've got to do, but they don't tend to think what would happen if, you know, when you're that age, you're immortal. So you're
invincible.
Invincible, absolutely. You're not thinking about these things.
That's true.
And so a lot of us, yeah, even myself, I'm guilty of that. I didn't start thinking about that stuff until Uncle Sam said, you're gonna think about these things.
Yes, and I think that people that go into the military do get that advantage because the military does require you, even if you're 18 years old, to get those documents. So the people who don't go through the military and don't get that really ought to be thinking about this. If you are more than 18 and you've been through the military, but you didn't have kids then, you ought to rethink your documents. I think updating documents is something that people don't particularly like to do, but is a necessary part of this whole process of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, we get the question quite often, how often should we update our documents? And it's not a time issue. It's a circumstance issue. When your circumstances change, you need to rethink your estate planning. So one way to do it is, you know, everybody has to file a federal income tax return. That's when you're thinking about your affairs and where you are in this world, you might just think, pull out your documents and see if all of the decisions are the same. You know, if you've had a child since you did your will, well, maybe it's time to update the will to add your next child in into the will. If things have changed and maybe one of the people that you've named as a guardian has moved away and you're not close to them anymore, maybe it's time to change your documents. If there are no changes, put them back away until the next year.
Yeah. At least give them a look over.
At least give them a look over, yes.
Now, a lot of people may think that some things fall into default, and maybe they don't. If I don't have any kind of legal document at all saying who has power of attorney or who can make medical decisions for me, does that default to the spouse, or does it default to a document that may be 10 years old?
Well, Floyd, it would default to a document that may be 10 years old and could be outdated if that document existed. The problem that we see too much is when there are no documents, and what that defaults to is a court-ordered process called a guardianship or conservatorship. And there is no way to get that quick enough in an emergency to make those vital decisions. There are some stopgap provisions in the law, but they're often clunky and not very efficient. And the goal is to make things smooth and easy for families in periods of stress when there are emergency decisions to be made. And that's what we're trying to help people with.
Absolutely. Real quick, sir, could you go over the topics that will be covered during the seminar?
Of course. So as I mentioned before, we're going to kick it off with the introductory, definitional, foundational concept part of the seminar. We're going to stop for a quick break, coffee and snacks. Then we're going to move into concepts regarding planning for long-term care. This is Medicaid planning, nursing home planning, and things like that. The worst topics of the day, for sure, but important to have an understanding of because there's a lot of misunderstanding and misinformation out there about those topics. So we're going to try to clear that up to the best of our ability. We're going to stop for lunch, and then after lunch or during lunch, we're going to have that pitfalls of coffee shop estate planning section where we're going to talk about some of the common mistakes that we see when people try to do this themselves. We're going to move into probate. What is it and what does it cost? Have another refreshment break, talk about the difference of wills and trusts after that, and then we're going to move right into the question and answer session. The day goes pretty fast. It's a lot of information, but it's good information, and we really hope to see you there.
Now, when it comes to retaining a lot of this information over the decades that you've held this seminar, sir, the individuals who walk out of there and retain the most of the information, they take notes? From what you can see,
so they do take notes, but we also give handouts for each topic. So they'll walk away with a series of outlines with the salient points. I mean, I guess speaking only for myself, I can listen or I can write, but I can't really listen and write. You know, if I'm taking notes, I'm not hearing the next thing that's being said. So we try to take the notes for you and give you a handout so you can look at the handout and follow along as we're talking. And then you'll have that document to take home with you when you go.
A lot of individuals stop you on the street later on and say, hey, you guys are the ones that give those great seminars. I got a question.
So I would say we do get quite a few follow-up questions. Sometimes it's on the street. Sometimes it's a phone call from somebody. But we do, you know, if we're on the way to the post office, you know, somebody may stop us and with a question. A lot of times people come into our offices and just ask those questions too. So there's multiple ways to follow up. If you have a question that didn't get answered, call us or come to our office or see us on the street or at the grocery store.
Stop them when they're shopping.
That's right.
Mr. Sherwood, I got about, if you give me 30 seconds, why should everybody attend something like this?
I think it just comes back to the fact that there's a lot of misunderstanding and misinformation out there. One of the things that we hear very often is that, well, wait a minute, why do we have to go through the probate process? My mom had a will. That's something that we hear all the time. Or we hear that, oh, I just deeded the property, my home to my children, or added my children to my bank account. And often the full understanding of the effects of that decision are not fully understood by the individual.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, in why this is important.
Absolutely. One more time, where and when will this take place?
It's going to be at the Hub on Smith Street, and it will be at 9 o'clock on October 4th.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would recommend that if you haven't taken one of these seminars before, head on in there. Get yourself a strong foundation. Save your family a lot of heartache and time on the back end. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for jumping in this morning and speaking with me and giving me a lot of your valuable time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Floyd.
All right, you've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
So I was recently informed and corrected that a semicolon is not the small intestine. And the same goes for you tuning up or fixing your own 4x4 side-by-side to get it ready for hunting, firewooding, or snow plowing. Because trying that yourself is like doing your own aspidectomy. Messy, painful, and not something you walk away bragging about. That's why you need the specialist at Hando Service Center. So skip the home remedies, get your rig in for a full checkup at Hando's on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Back in the days when Sheridan was a frontier town, folks gathered where good food, strong spirits, and fine company met. That spirit lives on at Frackleton's Fine Food and Spirits. Step through our doors on Main Street and you'll find more than a meal. You'll find a taste of Western history, crafted with care and served with the warmth of true Wyoming hospitality. Whether you're raising a glass or savoring a plate, every moment is where history meets unforgettable flavor. Frackleton's, Main Street, downtown Sheridan.
It's Lights, Camera, Action for the 8th Annual YO Film Fest presented by the Standish Family Fund. It all kicks off on Thursday, October 2nd with feature documentary Remaining Native. The Friday night feature is World Without Cows, a film that tells the importance of cattle to Wyoming's people and environment. New this year, bring the kids for Saturday morning cartoons at 9 a.m., a family-friendly block of animated short films with a colorful mix of styles for kids and adults. Pajamas encouraged. Enjoy a cereal bar, breakfast treats, coffee, and Bloody Marys for the grown-ups. Then at 10:30, it's Wake Up with Wyoming, short films made in Wyoming by Wyoming filmmakers or inspired by life in this beautiful state. See the complete lineup and get individual tickets or buy a festival pass, good for the whole weekend. The 8th Annual YO Film Fest, October 2nd through October 5th. Get your tickets now at yofilmfest.org. It is Thursday, and that means it's time for Hop Eyes on SheridanMedia.com. Right now, you can head over there and find deals for up to 50% off of retail value. This week, we have dining gift certificates, service gift certificates, merchandising gift certificates, and a bunch more. You can find whatever it is you're looking for all from local Sheridan retailers, and they all start at half off of retail value. Head over right now to SheridanMedia.com and click on the Hop Eyes button and place your bids. Hurry, though, bidding ends tonight at 8 p.m.